Greetings and welcome to another episode. As we continue with our episodes, it's beginning to become apparent that the world of sci-fi is now sci-fact. Up first, we have the portal to the subconscious.
Imagine waking up, pressing a button, and watching your dream unfold like a surreal movie. That's the promise of the Dream Recorder, a new open-source device created by Dutch design studio Modum. It's being called a portal to your subconscious, and while it doesn't read your brainwaves, it does something almost as magical. It turns your spoken dream recollections into hazy, cinematic videos using AI. Let's start with the subconscious. It's the part of your mind that operates below conscious awareness. It stores memories, instincts, emotions, and patterns that shape your behavior, often without you realizing it. Dreams are thought to be one of the few windows into this hidden realm. They're messy, symbolic, and deeply personal. And now, thanks to this device, they're also visual. Here's how it works. After waking up, you speak your dream aloud into the Dream Recorder. The device transcribes your words, runs them through a video generation AI model, and produces a low-resolution, impressionistic video that reflects the mood and imagery of your dream. It doesn't scan your brain or record while you sleep. It's based entirely on your verbal description. The result is a dreamscape that's more poetic than precise, like watching your subconscious through a foggy lens. The benefits are intriguing. For one, it encourages reflection. Instead of forgetting your dreams within minutes, you get a visual anchor to revisit and interpret. It could help with creativity, emotional processing, or even therapy. Artists might use it to explore new ideas, while psychologists could use it to study dream patterns. And because it's open source, anyone can build it at home, customize it, and keep their data offline. But let's not get too dreamy. There are some concerns. First, privacy. Even though the device works offline, future versions or third-party apps could introduce cloud storage or data sharing. If your subconscious becomes a dataset, who owns it? What if someone uses your dream data to profile your emotions, fears, or desires? That's a slippery slope. Second, interpretation. The videos are generated by AI based on your words, not your actual brain activity. So while they're evocative, they're not scientifically accurate. There's a risk of overanalyzing or misinterpreting what you see, especially if you're using it for mental health purposes without professional guidance. Modum, the studio behind the Dream Recorder, has worked with big names like OpenAI and Google DeepMind and collaborated with institutions like MIT and Harvard. That gives the project some serious credibility, but also raises questions about future commercialization. Right now, it's a DIY tool for personal use. But in the future, it could be integrated into wellness apps, creative platforms, or even entertainment services. Imagine dream sharing on social media. Cool, but also kind of creepy. To protect yourself, here are a few tips. Keep your device offline. Don't upload your dream data unless you fully trust the platform. Be mindful of how much personal detail you share in your recordings. And remember, dreams are symbolic, not literal. Use the videos as a tool for reflection, not diagnosis. In the end, the Dream Recorder is a fascinating blend of art, tech, and psychology. It doesn't decode your subconscious, but it gives you a new way to engage with it. Like any powerful tool, it's all about how you use it. So if you're curious, creative, and cautious, this might just be the coolest bedside companion you've ever had.
Yikes. Okay, so, let's keep on this train. Up next, we got the killer cat.
A recent study reveals that a common blood protein called albumin can supercharge the fungus Candida albicans, turning mild yeast infections into dangerous, even life-threatening conditions. This new understanding forces us to rethink how we approach fungal infections and their treatment. Yeast infections are caused by an overgrowth of Candida albicans, a fungus that normally lives in harmony within the body, especially in the mouth, gut, and genital areas. But when certain conditions tip the balance, such as antibiotics, immune suppression, hormonal changes, or excess sugar, the fungus can grow unchecked. The infection works by producing hyphae, long, thread-like structures that dig into human tissues, releasing toxins that damage surrounding cells, forming protective biofilms that make it harder to eliminate. People with vaginas are especially susceptible to vaginal yeast infections. These occur due to changes in hormone levels, pH balance, or the use of medications that alter the microbiome. But immunocompromised individuals, diabetics, cancer patients, and anyone recovering from surgery also face a higher risk, especially when infections enter the bloodstream. Some common signs and symptoms of yeast infections include itching, burning, or swelling in affected areas, thick, white, clumpy discharge with little or no odor in vaginal infections, redness or soreness around the site of infection, pain during sex or urination, fatigue or fever if the infection becomes systemic. So what makes albumin so dangerous in this context? Albumin is the most abundant protein in human blood plasma. It helps transport nutrients, regulate fluid pressure, and support immune functions. But the study found that when Candida albicans interacts with albumin in vaginal tissues or blood, it transforms into a more aggressive form, even when its usual virulence genes are disabled. The fungus begins to produce a toxic lipid called 13-HOD, forms tighter biofilms, and becomes highly cytotoxic. If it gets into the bloodstream, this interaction with albumin turns the infection into a severe systemic illness that can affect major organs. This is particularly risky for patients with weakened immune systems or chronic illnesses. What should people know about albumin? It's essential for survival, but can unintentionally enhance fungal virulence. It's already present in tissue and blood, so it's not something introduced externally. It can override genetic modifications that were meant to disable the fungus's toxicity, essentially switching it back on. To reduce the risk of serious infection, avoid overusing antibiotics, which disrupt healthy microbes. Wear breathable clothing and maintain good hygiene. Manage blood sugar, since high glucose levels promote fungal growth. Use medical devices like catheters with caution, as they can provide pathways for infection. Dietary steps can also help prevent yeast infections. Limit sugars and refined carbs, which fuel fungal growth. Eat fermented foods like yogurt and kimchi to support healthy gut flora. Include natural antifungals like garlic, oregano oil, and coconut oil. Cut down on alcohol, which can impair immune function and gut balance. This new insight into how Candida albicans interacts with human biology shows that pathogens are more adaptable than we realized. Albumin isn't just a passive protein. It can be weaponized by microbes under certain conditions. That makes it critical for researchers to build more accurate models of human infection and develop treatments that account for the body's role in disease progression. Fungal infections are no longer just a minor irritation. They're emerging as serious health threats. And knowing the warning signs, at-risk groups, and preventative strategies could be the difference between mild discomfort and medical emergency.
Well, yeah. Let's just continue. The Great Mushroom Escape.
A mushroom that escaped North American kitchens is now wreaking havoc in the wild, and it's time we reckoned with what that means. The golden oyster mushroom, or Pleurotus citrinopoleitus, originally hails from Eastern Asia. It found popularity in the early 2000s thanks to its nutty flavor, vibrant yellow color, and ability to thrive in home-growing kits. But the very trait that makes it grow easily has led to trouble. It escaped cultivation and began colonizing forests across the U.S. and Canada. The mushroom likely spread through airborne spores from backyard kits or discarded remnants that were never properly contained. Once out in nature, it started outcompeting native fungi for space and resources, threatening biodiversity and crucial ecological functions like decomposing organic matter and supporting plant health. Native mushrooms, like the elm oyster or mossy maize polypore, are now struggling against this newcomer. Why do people eat something that can harm nature? Mostly, they don't realize the risk. Golden oysters are marketed as sustainable and are easy to grow at home, making them attractive to consumers who care about food quality. But there's been little education around the ecological consequences of letting these species loose, and even less regulation to prevent it. Not all mushrooms spell trouble. Here are a few that are safe and non-invasive. Buttonin, cremini, and portobello mushrooms, Agaricus bisporus. Common oyster mushrooms, Pleurotus austritus, native to North America. Shiitake, Lentinula edoda. Lion's mane, Hericium marinaceus, with known health benefits. These have long histories of cultivation and haven't disrupted local ecosystems. So what does all of this say about our food culture? It reflects a society fascinated by novelty, but disconnected from ecological context. We chase trends, whether it's mushroom supplements, DIY kits, or the latest superfood, but often ignore the bigger picture. This isn't just about mushrooms. It's a reminder that every food decision has environmental consequences. We need stronger labeling, better public education, and guidance around responsible growing practices. Mushroom cultivation should be confined to indoor setups unless we know a species poses no invasive risk. And maybe we should also start viewing fungi as part of our conservation efforts, not just kitchen curiosities. One helpful idea. Researchers are looking into sporeless strains that can't reproduce in the wild. Another is exploring mycoviruses, natural fungal viruses, as a method for population control. On the flip side, other mushroom-related risks include toxic species like death caps, Amanita phalloides, which resemble edible types, mistaken identity with psychedelic mushrooms leading to accidental poisoning, pathogens hitchhiking on imported fungi and affecting local microbial communities. The golden oyster mushroom isn't inherently bad. It's just misplaced. And its journey from trendy food to ecological threat should serve as a cautionary tale. Our kitchens are connected to our forests more than we think.
All right, y'all. We're going to seal this up on something a little more lively, more upful. No more doom and gloom for the week. Okay, so here we go. Extinct no more.
The sand cat is back, and it's got paws of mystery and a face that could melt the heart of a cactus. This elusive feline, Felis margarita, was recently captured on a trail camera in Pakistan's Kirthar National Park, a place where it was believed to be extinct. That's right, a creature thought to be gone forever, just photobomb conservation history. The sand cat is a small wildcat, about the size of a house cat, with oversized ears and a sandy coat that blends perfectly into desert landscapes. It's built for stealth, surviving in harsh environments with minimal water and maximum camouflage. The last confirmed sightings in Pakistan were so rare and scattered that the International Union for Conservation of Nature, IUCN, listed it as possibly extinct in the region. So what does this mean? First, it challenges our assumptions about extinction. Just because we haven't seen a species in years doesn't mean it's gone. It might be hiding, adapting, or simply avoiding humans, which, let's be honest, is a pretty solid survival strategy. Rediscoveries like this remind us that nature is full of surprises and that our data gaps can lead to premature conclusions. Ecologically, the sand cat plays a vital role. It helps control rodent and insect populations, keeping desert ecosystems balanced. Its return suggests that parts of its habitat are still intact enough to support it, which is a hopeful sign amid growing threats like sand mining and urban expansion near Karachi. And this isn't the only comeback story. Other animals, once thought extinct, have reappeared. The coelacanth, a prehistoric fish, was found alive off the coast of South Africa in 1938. The Lord Howe Island stick insect, nicknamed the tree lobster, was rediscovered on Ball's Pyramid in 2001. The La Palma giant lizard popped up in the Canary Islands after being declared extinct. The Cuban selenodon, a venomous mammal, was spotted again in the 2000s after decades of absence. Each rediscovery is a wake-up call. It tells us that conservation isn't just about saving what we see. It's about protecting what we might still have. It also highlights the importance of local conservation efforts, like those led by the Indus Fishing Cat Project, which set up the trail cameras that captured the Sand Cat's cameo. For society, this means we need to invest more in biodiversity research, especially for lesser-known species. Big cats get the spotlight, but small wild cats like the sand cat are just as important and often overlooked. Only about 3% of global conservation funding goes to small cats. To stay informed and protect these rediscovered wonders, people should support conservation groups, push for habitat protection, and be cautious about development in sensitive areas. And maybe, just maybe, we should all appreciate the wild a little more, because it's full of stories waiting to be told, even by creatures we thought were long gone.
You never know, huh? Well, one thing I know is it's always a pleasure being able to spend some time with y'all. And until next time, when we meet at the crossroads. Peace.